All right, this is Pure Decking, show number 432 for Thursday, April the 15th, 1912. This is a show about stuff that interests me, like information security, rigging the game, and wondering if there's going to be a run on fiddles. So tonight, I am drinking, it's a Tennessee bourbon. What was it? Blue chip something. I forget.
It was a lie is what it is. It's Tennessee whiskey. Get it fucking right.
It said bourbon on the bottle.
Yeah, it's because Congress is a bunch of fucking retards.
I agree with you. It's not a Kentucky bourbon. It's a attempt at bourbon in Tennessee. It's not bad, but it's not
probably pretty good.
Yeah, it's not bad at all. I mean, it's just it was a little pricey for what it was, and now I'm blanking on the fucking name. Anyways, Madman, what are you drinking?
Sadly, water. It'll be either that or tea for the next few weeks. And I'll break down and be like, oh, this weekend I'm drinking bourbon. I don't give a fuck. But right now it hasn't gotten that far.
Yeah, I should probably start doing the same, unfortunately.
Well, if I go long enough without drinking, RU's going to die. So I have to fix that.
RU, what are you drinking?
Water. Sorry, I just got handed the full version of that cop being assassinated. It caught me out. Sorry, just drinking some water, man. I'm watching the riots and keeping an eye on the Dogecoin price tonight.
Yep.
As we are sitting currently at, let me just refresh. So it's 23 cents. We're down a bit.
Wait a minute. Yesterday wasn't that 11?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Doge run rocking overnight.
Up. Yeah. Well, Bitcoin shot up again too, didn't it?
It's pretty much doubled in the last couple of hours, Madman. Oh, actually, Bitcoin was down last check, but I'll do another quick check
it's
now.
It's back at 63. I thought it went up to 65, but maybe I looked at the wrong website or something. I just looked on Coinbase. It's at 63.
At the moment, it's sitting at $81,662 Australian. So whatever that is in freedom units. So what, 70, 76?
I just know that the value I put into my little hardware wallet a couple of months ago is, you know, shot up by, what, 40%? So, it's, yeah, that's nuts. Bitcoin went up because of Coinbase's stock. Okay, yeah, that makes sense. Apparently Coinbase's stock was valued better than BP when they, you know, went public.
Wow, that's impressive.
So, I don't know. Oh, tell you what, Madman, because I probably should do it too. You keep up with the teetotaling, and I'll try to as well.
I make no promises to no man.
given my profession, somebody might die. I don't know.
Just remember, use it on other people, they're the problem. Not saying what to use, and this is not me suggesting violence to solve any problems, because it can. I mean, it should not be used in such a manner except in extreme emergencies, such as the declaration of war, or too many stupid people populating your workplace.
Unfortunately, most of them are not in this country. You need some bourbon barrel aged tea. Cykros, please tell me that's a thing. And not just, you know, a neat idea you just had.
And
what's
if
that?
It is a neat idea. No, it can't be a thing. I want that to be a neat idea he just had so I can fucking steal it and bring it to market. Because that sounds amazing.
Bourbon barrel aged tea.
It's going to leak some of the booze out of the barrel, and you're going to have alcoholic tea.
I would order that, like, right now, if that existed.
I'm Googling it.
Well, while you Google that, I guess we can get into stories here, because I know I don't want to... little voice is a little scratchy, so I don't want to go too nuts with it. Haney products. Oh, that's a thing. Oh, that's getting bookmarked. That's a thing. cask.
Do they age the tea leaves in it and not tea itself?
I would assume.
Okay.
With our new black cask bourbon, we set aside black tea, finely aged bourbon. Yeah, I'm guessing they age the tea leaves in the bourbon barrel.
Huh. That, what I was thinking aging brewed tea in the bourbon barrel, but I guess that can eventually go bad. So, yeah. I want to give this stuff a shot.
That's awesome.
You work in the field, Morps. What the hell is a cyber pandemic?
That's a made-up fucking term that doesn't mean anything.
Well,
I know what they probably think they mean by it.
Yeah, I'm just reading the World Economic Forum hints at global cyber pandemic this summer to facilitate Great Reset.
Cyber pandemic. So
now yeah, I have no idea what it means.
Because I've heard a lot of language regarding hate speech and misinformation and fake news as being a cyber pandemic. So I'm kind of wondering if that's, you know, new age speak for, you know, we're going to censor what you can do on the internet. Now, if they're talking about malware and shit like that, I'm actually getting ready to do a bleeping computer article on here that's interesting, and I think it's worth talking about. But I doubt that, because a malware pandemic would just mean that every computer is vulnerable to it no matter what. We've had that for years.
Yeah.
Now, we've got more and more things that are, you know, where it's actually affecting real things. Like, you sent me that article earlier this week. That they missed shipment because of malware. And, of course, I've seen plenty of things about things getting shut down due to malware. But that's probably not what they mean, especially given the articles you usually run with. I'm betting that's a backhanded way of saying we're going to censor the internet.
Yeah, possibly.
Especially in conjunction with the Great Reset.
Yeah, I did. Anytime I see that in something now, I just sort of, or it, but that was the headline, so I had to read it. I leave that Great Reset thing out. I just look around the edges. There's generally some sort of wet dream by some leftist fucking article writer.
Well,
you know
that's the
mean?
Thing. Every time I see Great Reset, all the language around it is basically that implies Great Reset just means we're going socialist.
Yeah.
And it sounds like real socialism, not the, you know, your government services versus you know, other government spending type of arguments we have about socialism in the States most of the time. I mean, like, seizing the means of production socialism.
I mean, I wish you'd stop parodying the Fall of Rome book that I've got.
Like I said, I wonder if there's going to be a run on fiddles.
I'm pretty sure in the next couple of months you're going to see the language around the president being too powerful, and there's no need for a president, and the Senate should just run everything. That with the Supreme Court being stacked, and the Supreme Court and the Senate will just handle the affairs, because no man should have that much power.
Well, they haven't stacked it yet. They want
but
to.
But if it does.
They certainly want to.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That's gonna be a mess, because that means the next time that the Republicans are in power and have all three houses, they're going to do it, which means, you know, in a couple of election cycles, the Supreme Court will be as big as, like, the Senate. Just because, you know, it's like, oh, their side can't be in charge. We have to, fuck it. I don't want to do it. I don't want to do politics.
Yeah, we're a tech show. Let's do tech.
Okay.
Politics after the show.
Check out Geopolitics and Empire Podcast. Psychos, you have brought that one up a couple of times because we dance around the edges on it. And we shouldn't. But we all follow it, so it comes up.
Like, Chris, I listen to Tucker every day, so I know how to think correctly, okay? Oh, so I don't need any other political shows. I have Tucker. Tucker lets me know how to think each day.
The amazing thing is, I've never heard Tucker say, don't go listen to other people. But I've heard other, you know, like Stelter and Cuomo say, oh, don't listen to anybody else, just listen to us, we're the only ones you need, which I find hilarious, because you have a lot more people who only listen to Tucker than listen to either of those two jackholes. Anyways,
If you haven't figured it out, that was tongue-in-cheek.
Of course it was.
I do enjoy the Tucker Carlson show.
I wish you'd take back your bow tie.
Yes, me too, man. That was good. But, anyway, what do we got for first story?
First story is from Bleeping Computer. And a court-approved FBI, and this is interesting because a court approved it. A court-approved FBI operation was conducted to remove web shells from compromised U.S.-based Microsoft Exchange servers without notifying the server's owners.
Whoa.
So the FBI used probably the same vulnerabilities that your malware used to get into the Microsoft Exchange servers, because this has been a thing for the past couple of weeks, that Exchange servers have problems, and they went in to clean up the malware. Now, you know it wasn't done by hand, so they basically wrote a bot to undo a malware bot with these Exchange vulnerabilities.
And they didn't get a hold of the people that actually own the servers.
Nope, they just did it. They just released it.
Oh, that's trespassing.
Well, that's definitely worth talking about here, because it's an interesting concept. But on March 2nd, Microsoft released a series of Microsoft Exchange security updates for vulnerabilities actively exploited by a hacking group known as Hafnium. I don't know who names these things. These vulnerabilities are collectively known as proxy login and were used by threat actors in January and February to install web shells on compromised Exchange servers. These web shells provided remote access to servers where threat actors used them to exfiltrate emails and account credentials, among other things. Over the following weeks, government agencies released guidance and Microsoft released a variety of scripts and tools to help victims determine if they'd been compromised and remove the shells. Simultaneously, the other threat actors began using the Microsoft Exchange vulnerabilities to install ransomware, crypto miners, and further web shells. For anybody who's not familiar, web shell is... It's interesting to me that they're using it in an article like this, because I usually think of that more as kind of an industry term. A web shell is just, I have a script that lives on your computer that I can remotely access and run commands. Usually it's, we call them a web shell because usually it's a compromised web server and I'm hitting a web page.
It's an old term too.
Oh yeah. So like I said, I'm sure that web shells are absolutely what was deployed because Exchange, you know, usually has a web interface attached to it. So I'm sure they were. It's just interesting to me that somebody's actually using the right term. In a Department of Justice press release published today, the FBI states they used a search warrant to access the still-compromised Exchange servers, copy the web shells as evidence, and then remove the shell from the server. The FBI requested this warrant because they believe that the owners of the still-compromised web servers did not have the technical ability to remove them on their own and that the shell posed a significant risk to the victim. Quote, based on my training and experience, most of these victims are unlikely to remove the remaining web shells because the web shells are difficult to find due to their unique file names and paths, or because the victims lack the technical ability to remove them on their own, unquote, the FBI stated in an affidavit in support of the search warrant. As there was concern that notifying the owners of these servers could compromise the operation, the FBI requested the warrant be sealed and that notification of the warrant be delayed until the operation was finished. Quote, accordingly, the United States requests approval from the court to delay notification until May 9th, 2021, 30 days from the first possible date of execution of April 9th, 2021, or until the FBI determines that there are no longer need for delayed notice, whichever is sooner, the affidavit requested. They further requested permission to search at any time of day to avoid detection by threat actors. Quote, because accessing such computers at all times will allow the government to minimize the likelihood of the actor's detection and deployment of countermeasures that could frustrate the authorized search, a good cause exists to permit the execution of the requested warrant at any time in the day or night, states the affidavit. To clean the identified Microsoft Exchange servers, the FBI accessed the web shells using known passwords utilized by the threat actors, copied the web shells as evidence, then executed a command to uninstall the web shell from the compromised server. FBI personnel will access the web shells, enter passwords, will make evidentiary copy of the web shell, then issue a command through each of the each of the approximately web shells to the servers to delete the web shells themselves, the FBI explained in the affidavit. A court in Houston granted the search warrant on April 9th and permitted the FBI to remove web shells from the listed exchange servers over the next 14 days. The court also allowed the FBI to delay providing notice to exchange servers being owners being searched. The DOJ press release states the FBI operation was successful and that they could remove, states that the operation was successful and they could remove hundreds of web shells from compromised U.S. exchange servers. However, the FBI states that the operation only removed web shells and did not apply security updates or remove any other malware that threat actors may have installed on the server. The FBI is now in the process of notifying victims whose exchange servers were accessed during the operation. And I'm sure having access to that web shell probably helped them figure out what those servers were and who owned them. The FBI will send these notifications via email from an official FBI.gov email account, or if contact information is not available, by using a service provider ISP to contact the victim. Now, assuming that everything they did was on the up and up, is this a bad thing?
The only issue I have is not serving the warrant when they're doing this. They need to They need to tell whoever owns it, "Hi, we have this warrant. This is what's going on." The executing it and then telling them, that's like the cops kicking in my door, going through all of my shit, and then 30 days later, here's your warrant.
Yeah.
Now,
that's the issue I have too, Madman.
If they informed the server owners and then it's like, "Here's our warrant, this is what we're doing, you don't have a choice," that's fine.
So it's interesting because when I was, you know, learning network security, going to school for it and all the reading I've done on it, almost always security practitioners are told to never hack back, mainly because of legal issues that, you know, they won't get in trouble for hacking you, but our government will still prosecute you for hacking them, kind of shit, right?
Yeah.
So you're almost, plus it's a, you know, it's a standards and practices issue. It's a morals issue. But you're almost always told never hack back. Now,
and the compromised server, whoever you're hacking, might not be the actual enemy in some of these instances.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So that's why they were very specific in the warrant about what they were going to do, which was, we're going to log into the existing web shell using credentials we've already acquired. We're going to run these commands, and that's all we're going to do because that's all that's listed in the warrant. Now, because they went through the courts, they got the warrant, I don't doubt that that's exactly what they did. I doubt they did any additional shenanigans, especially because it's all, you know, public record, and I'm betting it's on the up and up. But they did preemptively go into all these people's servers and access them. So, you know, one, search and seizure violation, potentially. So constitutional issue. Although you could argue if their server is exposed on the internet that, you know, maybe you don't have such a right to privacy on a server exposed to the internet. I don't know. That's a philosophical point that we could go around on. But it wouldn't be the first time that you've seen exploits, you know, used to try to fix exploits. What I mean by that is, I'm thinking back during Sasser and NIMDA, you know, XP days, Windows XP days. There were groups that actually wrote variants of the Sasser and NIMDA worms that would log into the machine, patch it, and then clean up the known, you know, bots, and then just delete themselves. That, you know, security researchers, quote unquote, released. And on one hand, you could argue they're doing something good. They're releasing sort of an inoculation to the virus that's spreading, to keep using those terrible terms. And, you know, that's, you know, calling things viruses and worms and stuff like that. I mean, yeah, it's all fun, but you really do need to use the correct term of malicious software or malware, because it's you're just, you know, you're envisioning the wrong things when you talk about a computer virus. I mean, yeah, they're called viruses, but they're not the same thing. It's not a medical issue. You don't have a cyber pandemic. You have, you know, malware spreading. And depending on what that malware does, it could seriously hamper a machine or cause data loss. So I think there's room for a real philosophical discussion about what the FBI did here. But they also didn't fix the issue, which means another botnet can sweep through these unpatched servers relatively quickly.
Well, there's one also limited on what they can do. Do they have the authority to patch? Because that's actually altering the server.
Probably not.
And I don't know if I would quite okay that, because the reason some servers aren't patched is the patches screw up what
the server's doing. Absolutely.
What the server's doing. And it sucks that you're stuck with that problem of, do I stay vulnerable or do I do my job?
Welcome to the world of Windows.
Well, that's certainly the case. Well, it's not just Windows, dude.
I know.
Anybody running Java software will know that pain of, oh no, we can't update off this version of Java. We have dependencies that have never been updated because, you know, they grabbed some random library off GitHub 10 years ago and the author has since disappeared and, you know, it still only supports Java 6, but that library is critical to our infrastructure. So, you know, basically all you can do is laugh at it at this point. But you're right in that they didn't really make a material change to the server other than just deleting the web shell. And I imagine since all they did was log into the server, log that it was compromised, I'm certain that they collected some information off the server to identify it, because now they're going through and identifying all the servers that they got, so that they can notify the owners. Somebody came up with this idea of, well, we've got these web shell passwords. Why don't we just log into all these servers, figure out who owns them, and then we can notify them, hey, go fix your shit. I'm sure that's where that came from. Somebody had that idea.
The reason for the delayed warrant is we can't serve it until we know who they are. And
exactly.
We have to do this to know who they are.
So,
but I'll bet dollar for dollar that they imaged everything.
Oh, I'm sure they did.
That way, we just got to image it all for legal protection, you know? So we've got a note of what we changed.
Well, maybe not the whole thing, but because email servers can be huge. But they probably
they've got the data storage.
I'm sure they pulled some key stuff. I'm thinking more about the bandwidth and moving all that data. When you're moving terabytes of data, the physics of it actually come into play.
No, I know.
You know, it's like if I'm logging into several thousand email exchange servers and copying every message off of them, there's actually, you know, there's network concerns, there's data storage concerns, there's just a sheer amount of time it's going to take to do all that that makes me think they probably didn't, you know, copy everything off those servers. But I'll bet they fingerprinted.
I'm just thinking, what would I do with an unlimited budget and a court order? You know what I mean?
I would stand up a couple of test servers and make sure I knew exactly what I wanted off those servers so that command scripted and ready to rock. And
we don't
right,
know how long they were working on this. This could have been a planned operation for years.
Maybe.
Just set it all up. I'd be pretty pissed if it was mine and they just went in and 30 days later they let me know. But then again, I should be monitoring my fucking network, right?
Well, probably. But at the same time, and this is the thing, they didn't deploy a new exploit. They used the existing web shell. So they used an exploit that was already there. Somebody else had already... I guess if you want a bad analogy, it would be like, you know, your FBI officer's walking by a building and they see the windows already busted in, so they poke their head in to see if something's going on.
And to continue that bad analogy, one reason they might not need a warrant is any cop, if
excellent
they walk
circumstances.
Past your house and they see your door kicked in and possibly notice a man lying on the floor and they could be dead or injured, they don't need a warrant to go in your house. They can step in and say, hey, are you okay? What's going on here? Accident circumstances.
That happened 2 weeks ago. An alarm went off. Cops were notified. They arrested the homeowner because they had to check. They didn't know who the dude was in the house.
That apparently happens.
Weird, because they usually have you, you know, can you show me your ID, sir?
That usually happens. That happens more often than you think. You occasionally hear about that where they arrest the homeowner because, you know, they're locked out of their own house and they catch him trying to break in or something like
that.
Well,
this dude was already in the house, and the only reason they threw him in handcuffs in the back of the car because he's been a bit of a dick, to be honest.
Well, that'll happen. You know? Being around a cop means you're now in a no stupid zone. You probably shouldn't be stupid.
I mean, I get it. You've got your rights and stuff like that, but...
Well, there's practicality to it, too. Like, you know, everything you read online says, don't talk to the cops. Get a lawyer. And it's like, yeah, that's great. But practically, if you're taking that to the logical extreme of, you know, never saying a thing to the cops without a lawyer present, you're going to find yourself getting arrested a lot just for being a dick. I mean, you know, it has to give way to practicality at some point, right?
I mean, just rank, file, and serial number, right? That's all you got to give them.
So... And I don't know exactly how I feel about this, because like I said, all the training and all the reading and all the philosophy and writings on this has always been, you don't hack back, you don't touch somebody else's server without permission. Now, arguably, the court order gives them permission. But then the question is, does this, I'm assuming a federal court in Texas, have the authority to say, yes, you can log into every compromised exchange server in the country?
And that's another issue I have with some FBI warrants. I think the court you go to only have jurisdiction over their area, which makes it, I know, makes policing the internet very, very difficult, because until you execute the warrant, you might not even know where the server is. So there are jurisdictional issues with that. But I think the court should be limited to issuing warrants only within their jurisdiction.
So I'm still going to say, I don't think what the FBI did here from a technical standpoint, I don't think what they did was all that bad. I really don't. But there are philosophical implications here, and there's, you know, a whole bunch of legal issues here that come up because they were deleting web shells off other people's servers. People who didn't know they were doing it and, you know, have no way of knowing that a warrant had been issued for their server. So, I don't know. I think there's room for a real conversation here and policy, because it's one of those things where it's like, are we going to say that because you're connected to the internet, it's sort of like operating a car on the public roads? You know, you give up some rights to connect to these networks, or are we going to say... It's your server, it's your property, and it has to be treated as such at all times.
Well, even with your server and your property, if we make it into another real-world example, if you have a house and you don't maintain it, the local jurisdiction can condemn it.
Well, that's true, too.
If you have a yard and you're not maintaining it and it becomes a hazard, your county can send someone over to mow it and then charge you for it.
Well, unfortunately, there's no such thing as building codes enforcement for the internet. Maybe there should be. I don't know how that would go.
You dare even think about adding regulation. That would fucking beast.
That would probably end poorly.
That's an ass kicking.
And some things don't need to be solved with the regulation, like what the FBI just did. Let's say they damaged one of these servers. They can still be sued. Even if they did it with a warrant.
I mean, like I said, I'm willing to accept that what they did was on the up and up here. But Cycros had a great point in the IRC. How long before they're using some kind of a black ops team to deploy the malware to justify them going in to fix it and then look around?
I wasn't going to go there. But
well, Cycros did. So.
Yeah.
Well, that's a problem that you can't solve. It's saying... So, what do we do about dirty cops? We already have an issue with dirty cops. Mm. They have internal investigators to try to weed those guys out. Are they great? I don't know. They're what we have. If humans were angels, we wouldn't need governments.
Mm.
But unfortunately, we're not.
So I mean, on the Dogecoin price. We're about to break the 30-cent barrier, boys. Buckle up, buckaroos.
Damn, I wish I kept that Dogecoin I had a few years ago. I had a couple thousand Dogecoin. Traded it around because I was goofing around with playing with cryptos. Of course, you know, you could say the same thing about Bitcoin. It's like, man, I wish I'd kept all that Bitcoin I bought when it was $5.
Mm-hmm. We just don't think about things like that and tend to move on to the next story.
Just don't think about it. Just don't think about it, Morty. Anyways, yep, next story is from The Verge. I think it's interesting because I'm not certain how this would play out. The European Union is considering banning the use of artificial intelligence for a number of purposes, including mass surveillance and social credit scores. This is according to a leaked proposal that is circulating online, first reported by Politico, ahead of an official announcement expected next week. If the draft proposal is adopted, it would see the EU take a strong stance on certain applications of AI, setting it apart from the US and China. Some use cases would be policed in a manner similar to the EU's regulation of digital privacy under the GDPR legislation. Member states, for example, would be required to set up assessment boards to test and validate high-risk AI systems, and companies that develop or sell prohibited AI software in the EU, including those based elsewhere in the world, could be fined up to 4% of their global revenue. I wonder how that works. If I don't do business in the EU, but somebody goes to my website and buys a piece of software that they've decided is a high-risk AI, are they still going to try to send? I guess they would.
If they're buying it in the EU, then you've kind of done business in.
You know, even unintentionally, yeah. So you'd have to actively block Europe if your software was on their list of naughty AI. I'm just wondering what they consider high-risk AI. Is that going to be the Microsoft chatbot that went Nazi in like an hour?
I'm kind of wondering what they mean by AI, because
it's not well-defined. I mean, you have machine learning algorithms, but I mean, even those, they're really huge collections of data matching algorithms. They're not like, we're not talking about fucking data from Star Trek here.
I think you missed the big thing, and it's not the story.
All right.
It's social credit score.
Oh, yeah.
So they admitted they're going for a social credit score like China? They've just admitted it in the article.
Well, saying that they don't want AI being used to set up social credit scores, I'm not sure. You could read that either way, that we're going to build a social credit score and we don't want this thing screwing with it, or that we don't want people setting up independent social credit scores.
I wonder how many Chinese people have gamified their social credit score.
All of them.
I hope so. I hope there are apps in the Chinese app stores that's like, you know, let you just sit there and do the cookie clicker shit to get your social credit score up. Because you know somebody's going to figure that shit out.
We've gamified actual credit scores, which is one of the reasons I think they should go away. Yeah. We should go back to manual underwriting.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. It's going to be more secure. And, more secure. Banks are going to hate me because they kill a big chunk of their revenue. They'll just need to remonetize.
The stream may have just cut out for a minute. I just saw that the recording should be fine, but I just saw the broadcast box's network hiccup. So if the stream just hiccuped, sorry guys. In the IRC, let me know if it just went to shit. It looks like it's all up and running correctly, but I definitely saw a network hiccup. So.
But I don't know how you would do mass surveillance cost effectively without some AI. Just let's say Britain, for example. How many CT cameras are in London? So if you're going to actually effectively use them to try to find a suspect, you're going to need to narrow it down. So at least the suspect is white. Let's filter out everyone with this shade of skin or darker.
Yeah, I don't know.
They're already testing facial recognition with it. Remember, they arrested what, 3 or 4 people for covering their faces up when they're walking past the test camera.
Yeah.
It's coming. Like, there's no stopping it.
So they've got some bullet points in the article here. According to a draft copy a copy of the draft seen by The Verge. Draft regulations include a ban on AI for indiscriminate surveillance, including systems that directly track individuals on physical in physical environments or aggregate data from other sources. A ban on AI systems that create social credit scores, which means judging someone's trustworthiness based on social behavior or predicted personality traits. Special authorization for using remote biometric identification systems. That's a name. Like facial
scans.
Facial recognition in public spaces. Notifications required when people are interacting with an AI system, unless this is, quote, obvious from circumstances and context of use, whatever that means.
Oh, I want to be in the court case when that goes through.
New oversight for high-risk AI systems, including those that pose a direct threat to safety, like self-driving car. That's what this is about. This is keeping Tesla out. Like self-driving cars and those that have a high chance of affecting someone's livelihood, like those used for job hunting, judiciary decisions, and credit scoring. Assessment for high-risk systems before they're put into service, including making sure that these systems are explicable to human overseers and that they're trained on, quote, high-quality data sets, trusted for bias. the creation of a European Artificial Intelligence Board consisting of representatives from every nation state to help the Commission decide on which AI systems count as high risk and recommend changes to prohibitions. Yeah. So the article goes on here, but it's the problem is they don't define what AI is, which just means you change your marketing terms. This isn't AI. AI is science fiction. That's data from Star Trek. This is algorithmic learning. So.
Well, I said I'd like to be in the court case when that's decided on what's obvious and what's not.
That's a good point, too.
One thing I'm thinking is they're making it where when you call into a business with the automated menu, they don't have to say this is an artificial intelligence because it's not obviously talking to a computer.
I might be that dumb, though.
Yeah, well, we can't write a law to explain everything to stupid people because then we would be explaining everything all the time because there is someone so retarded they don't know that you need to drink water to live.
Isn't that what California is all about, though? Coffee's hot and don't use a hairdryer in the shower and shit like that.
And every bleeding thing has a label on it that says this is known
gives to
save
California
to give you cancer. Yeah, don't use Gorilla Glue as shampoo. Yeah, they're just some people too stupid to write a law for, okay? Don't try. You're going to break the world.
But Madman,
that's where reasonableness comes in.
You and I have both worked retail. I've seen people who are drunk lose arguments with you scans. You have too.
I've seen people say, no, I'm not high, and then lay down on a display of chairs and pass out. And their friend that was trying to get them to pick up money from the wire service looks around for the cops and leaves.
Wow.
Yes, oh my. I've seen the dumb. I know it is out there. I'm still saying reasonableness needs to remain a legal term in use. Now, I will concede what is reasonable is becoming dumber and fucking dumber every year. We need to fight against this as a society.
Psychros,
or we will
just
fall.
Psychros just gave the example. He's had a customer complain because they jabbed a steak knife in their mouth and cut themselves.
What? No, you're too stupid to live. Why are you putting a steak knife in your mouth, and how is it?
They're wanting to look cool. They're stabbing the little cube of steak they just cut with the knife and then eating it off the knife and then cutting their tongue because the knife is actually sharp, because I'm betting Psychros actually maintains his utensils in his restaurant.
Yeah.
In a slightly related but much more funny note, do you know why most dinner knives are rounded?
Because of that point.
So that you won't kill your neighbor in a
no,
fight.
So you don't kill the host. It's from the Middle Ages.
There's all kinds of rules about utensils from the Middle Ages. regarding forks and shit like that, and you know how not to insult your host with them so that you don't kill your host with them.
The rounded edges, so it's harder to stab them to death.
Dude, clearly, I've been reading the wrong books lately.
Yeah, I know. I'm going to lose the argument whenever I say people aren't that dumb, because they are, but still going to make it. We need to fight back against the stupid. Let them fucking die out. Don't explain shit to them. They'll just go to jail and starve.
I like to just think of them as the modern day equivalent of zombies. They basically are wandering around in a daze doing whatever the TV tells them. Named Karen. Anyways, next article is from decrypt.co. Bitcoin is, quote, a boon for surveillance, says former CIA director. I believe that. I absolutely believe that. Because that's the fun part. Everybody talks about how Bitcoin is for anonymous transactions. And it kind of is, but every transaction is logged in the blockchain. The problem is tying a wallet to an individual. So once you know an individual's Bitcoin wallet address, you can go see every transaction they've done in Bitcoin, or that their wallet at least has been involved in. So if you're truly concerned about anonymity, you have to create a new Bitcoin wallet for every transaction, and you have to figure out a way to get the funds out of those, you know, one-time use wallets into your real one without it leaving a trail, because you can just see all the transactions. So you can always figure out, you know, you could always follow it back to, you know, whatever the real wallet that's you're using to try to, you know, get money in or out of Bitcoin is.
Yeah, you need to structure it, extract it from Bitcoin, and then put it back in, like order like, a money order, and
yeah,
then
multiple
cash
times.
It, then deposit. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, well, basically anything else you would do for money laundering, but it's you know, because you have a flipping transaction log that anybody, well, I mean, it's a ledger, right? Anybody can go read the Bitcoin ledger. There are websites to let you go search it. So, and there are Tumblr services, but using those tends to be pretty obvious money laundering. Yeah. Bouncing it out to Monero and back, yeah. Well, that's the thing, though, is because you'd have to bounce it in and out so many times, you're going to burn a lot of your Bitcoin on transaction fees. So that, or you'd have to have some means of having that one main wallet that you do business out of that can't be tied back to your real identity. You know, so you need some way of, I mean, ultimately, if this is your only source of income, you need some way of moving that Bitcoin, you know, into something you can use to buy food with, right? Pay rent with. So I'm sure there are ways to do that without it tying back to you. I'm not going to sit here and try to think of them. It just depends on what services are out there, I guess. But yeah, privacy. Yeah, Bitcoin's not for privacy, really. You get a little anonymity out of the fact that nobody knows who your wallet is tied to. But as a fun example, I bought one of those Trezor hardware wallets several months ago when I realized that all the Bitcoin I still had floating around in various different places from where I was playing with crypto was worth something. And so I, you know, all those different places, I gathered all up my Bitcoin and transferred it into the Trezor wallet. Well, one of those places was my Coinbase account, right? Well, Coinbase knows who the fuck I am. So Coinbase knows I transferred my balance from them to this hardware wallet. So it's not that hard for somebody to look at that to conclude that, oh, that hardware wallet address probably belongs to Morps because he sent all of his Bitcoin to it. So, you know, that's, anyways, the technology behind Bitcoin, quote, is a boon for surveillance and shouldn't be shunned by governments, but embraced, according to ex-CIA boss. Michael Morell, who was previously the CIA's acting director, said in an analysis of Bitcoin use in illicit finance that blockchain technology is powerful but underutilized forensic tool for governments to identify illicit activity and bring criminals to justice. The report, co-authored by Josh Kushner and Thomas Schubringer, was ostensibly written as a defense of Bitcoin, a response to growing, quote, concerns about illicit financial operation or implications of the cryptocurrency ecosystem, unquote. Published by the recently formed Crypto Council for Innovation, led by Coinbase and Square, among others, the report concluded that the criminal use of Bitcoin is significantly overstated. Rather than being the currency of choice for criminals, it can be used to catch them. Quote, put simply, blockchain analysis is a highly effective crime-fighting and intelligence-gathering tool, unquote, the report read. The reason? That the technology Bitcoin runs on, blockchain, means all transactions are logged on a public, decentralized, immutable ledger. Tracking illicit Bitcoin transactions is therefore easier than tracing illegal funds moved across borders using, quote, traditional banking transactions, and far easier than trying to follow cash, according to the report. One source in the report was quoted as saying that if all criminals use blockchain, we could find and wipe out illicit financial activity. This goes against the narrative that authorities in the United States and Europe right now, as well as recent reports from crypto tracing firms such as Chain Analysis. In December 2020, Chain Analysis, which worked closely with law enforcement throughout the world, said darknet markets had raked in more than ever in crypto. So, most recently in February, U.S. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen expressed worry that Bitcoin was used often for illicit finance, and that the European Central Bank's president, Christine Lagarde, said in January that Bitcoin was used for funny business and money laundering. Again, I think the guy who said that they're underutilizing analyzing the blockchain is right. That the reason that people are getting away with this shit is because law enforcement doesn't know how to go look. They don't know how to read the blockchain and then figure out that we need to figure out what wallet this stuff is. I mean, it's common when you see them picking apart malware. And, you know, they get the Bitcoin addresses that the ransomware guys want their money deposited into. They just go look and see how much money they've got. If you have a Bitcoin address, you can go see how much money is in that wallet. You just go look on the Bitcoin, on the blockchain. It's not hard. So, yeah, if you've got a set of addresses you're monitoring, you can just pull every transaction that goes to them and see when new ones happen and see what their balance is. Hell, a few years back, when they took down Silk Road, people started watching a lot of the Bitcoin addresses that they suspected belonged to the FBI and caught FBI agents stealing Bitcoin from the evidence. And
boy, you know, that doesn't shock me.
Yeah, well, those guys ended up going to jail. So
we did the story.
Yeah.
I remember us discussing that.
Yeah, I mean, they caught them. They went to jail over it. So it's like, I think it's more just they don't know to look. So once law enforcement catches up with blockchain,
I just don't think they have the manpower right now, and well, no one's written software to do it yet. But I would have thought it would be more of an IRS thing.
Yeah, I imagine you're right that they'd really want to go after it for taxes in a few years, especially, well, now. I'm sure they do want to go back for taxes.
I'm surprised the IRS hasn't gone on Thought Patrol. Like, all these thoughts making millions on OnlyFans and shit. I wonder if they're filling in their W-2s and stuff like that.
Wasn't that a 4chan raid a while back where they were trying to get people to report thoughts to the IRS?
Yeah. Yeah, and they're all crying and shit. But, yeah, them, you know, showing off their new houses they just bought, shit like that. I would have thought the IRS would be interested in doing a Thought Patrol by now.
Well, that's the thing, is they're all basically independent contractors, so they should be filing as though they're a business owner.
Yeah, that's it.
So
Dogecoin still sitting at 29.
Kind of makes me wish, wonder when Dogecoin dips back down if it's worth putting $10 in just to see what happens.
Sitting here thinking of ways of structuring Bitcoin.
Well, again, every transaction is logged. So, like, you know, Cykros was suggesting you have to move in and out of Bitcoin, like, or move to Monero or something like that to move your money around. And I'm sure that's true, that would be a good way to do it by bouncing through various transactions. It kind of got me thinking back in the day, I wonder how much money was laundered through Second Life.
Oh, goddamn, so much, dude. You have no idea.
And cash businesses. I know I'm a bit old school on my thinking, but you would launder Bitcoin similar to cash, except it would be a bit more difficult because cash is actually anonymous.
Yeah.
Oh, WoW Gold.
WoW Gold. Yeah, Psychros is saying WoW Gold in the IRC as well. Next article is from Ars Technica. And yes, I'm speeding up because I noticed we're already at the 50-minute mark and I want to get through some of this stuff. Actually, I'm going to drop the web browser story from Neo Wynn just because I don't think that's a... Yeah, both Vivaldi and Brave say they're not going to support Google's Flock because they think it's a tracking service, and I doubt Firefox will either, but it's not much to talk about there. This one I do really want to talk about, though, and that's this article from Ars Technica. The looming software kill switch lurking in aging PlayStation hardware.
What?
Yeah.
They're going to kill my PlayStation 2 because they're fucking retarded.
No. PS2 is too old. 3s and 4s, on the other hand.
Oh, okay. Not affecting me. It's still crap, but it doesn't affect me specifically.
Well, you run into this problem. You know, this is kind of right to repair stuff, but you know, I do a lot of I do a lot of like Commodore 64, and I've been getting into Amiga stuff, and you have the same problem in that, you know, old Amigas are hard to come by because they soldered a fucking battery to the boards for the clocks, and those things leak and eat the traces. And a lot of old arcade boards had software protection that if they ever, the battery in them ever died, they would lose the BIOS decrypt codes. So like the RAM chips holding the game would just die. The boards would be useless because the battery died. I know there's ways to fix them nowadays, but it's, you know, they had to reverse engineer it and shit like that. So unless something changes, an issue lurking in older PlayStation's internal timing systems threatened to eventually make every PS4 game and all downloaded PS3 games unplayable on current hardware. Right now, it's not a matter of if, but when this problem will occur. This ticking firmware time bomb has been known in certain PlayStation preservation and hacking circles for a while, but it's gaining new attention amid Sony's recently announced decision to shut down online stores for the PS3, PSP, and the Vita software. While that impending store shutdown won't impact players' ability to play and re-download previous purchased software for now, the eventual wider shutdown of PSN servers for these aging consoles could have a much more drastic effect on the playability of a wide swath of games. The root cause of the issues has to do with the CMOS battery inside every PS3 and PS4, which is used to keep track of the current time, even when they're unplugged. If that battery dies or is removed for any reason, it raises an internal flag in the system's firmware indicating the clock may be out of sync with reality. After that flag is raised, the system in question has to check in with the PSN the next time it needs to confirm the correct time. On the PS3, this online check happens when you play a game downloaded from the PlayStation 4 or PlayStation Store. On the PS4, this also happens when you try to play retail games installed from a disc. This check has to be performed at least once, even if the CMOS battery is replaced with a fresh one, so the system can reconfirm clock consistency. So why does the PlayStation firmware care so much about having the correct time? On the PS3, the timer check is used to enforce any time limits that may have been placed on your digital purchases. As confirmed by the error message, the content has a time limit to perform this operation. Go to the settings, date, and time settings via the internet. Set that date and time set via the internet. That check seems to be required even for downloads that don't have any actual expiration date, adding a de facto one-time online check-in requirement for systems after their internal batteries fail. On the PS4, though, the timing check is apparently intended to make sure PSN trophy data is registered accurately and to prevent players from pretending to get trophies earlier than they actually had. You'd think this check could be segregated from the ability to load the non-trophy portions of the game, but player testing has shown that this seems to be a requirement to get PS4 games to load at all. None of this is a huge problem for PlayStation owners right now. Yes, the 10 to 20 year lifespan on your average CMOS battery is slowly running out, especially for the earliest PS3 hardware, but replacing the battery and resyncing the internal timer with a PSN or with PSN is a relatively minor annoyance for the time being, assuming you can find a Wi-Fi hotspot and PSN isn't, you know, out. But nothing lasts forever, as Sony's recent decisions regarding older PlayStation Online stores show. At some point in the future, whether it's in 1 year or 100 years, Sony will set off the PSN servers that power the timing check for hardware it no longer considers important. After that, it's only a matter of time before failing CMOS batteries slowly reduce all PS3 and PS4 hardware to semi-functional. Sony could render the problem moot relatively easier with a firmware update that limits the system functionality tied to the time check. So far, Sony hasn't publicly indicated it has any plans and responded to multiple requests or comment from Ars Technica. Until it does, complicated workarounds that make use of jailbroken firmware are the only option for ensuring that aging PlayStation hardware will remain fully functional into the future. So, the thing is, eventually, somebody's going to figure out how to emulate those calls to the PlayStation Network and, you know, let you set up your own little server to pretend to be PSN to fix these, especially after you swap a CMOS battery. But
I don't think that should be necessary.
That's
I think if they're going to stop supporting it, it becomes open source and they need to push out a patch pretty much.
Or at least push out the keys so that somebody else could develop the patch from the open source community.
Either one. No, actually, I think it's their responsibility. I bought it from them. And when I bought my PlayStation, it was to play PlayStation games for as long as I wanted to fucking play them. Not for as long as they wanted me to play them.
Well, and that's the thing. And that's why I wanted to talk about it. Because there's a lot of hardware out there that is tied to an online service. Nowadays, especially. I mean, you see it a lot with mostly home automation, things like the Nest cams or the thermostats and things like that. But, you know, you think about, like, I've got that Oculus Quest headset. Well, that thing checks in with Facebook all the fucking time. And I haven't turned it on in a bit, but every time I turn it on, of course, it has to resync with Facebook and download tons of updates and all this stuff. And if it can't touch a Facebook account, it limits what I can do with it. So if there's not internet at the time, if the internet's out, I can't play a game on it because it can't check in to verify that I own it. So, and, you know, you think about the same thing for, like, mobile app phone stores and or app stores for mobile apps and tablets and things like that. You know, shit like the Nintendo Switch and older Nintendos, they've got the same problem where they're shutting down these online stores for, the earlier generation of online consoles or internet-connected consoles. I was talking about the Commodores and the Amigas, which are just aging hardware problems, but this is actually, you know, the software is designed in such a way that if those servers aren't running, actually, you kind of have this problem with older Blizzard, older PC games that, rely on online services. Like, I'm thinking older Battle.net games where Blizzard just said, we're not supporting that protocol anymore. Now, they've re-released a lot of them, but, like, you know, if I want to play the original Diablo online, I usually have to find some third-party hacked Battle.net service. I don't think Blizzard supports it anymore. One day, Steam is probably going to shut down. Think about all the games you have wrapped up in there. So, I'm just wanted to talk about this because this is a real problem where you have aging things, and classic gaming's a thing. You know, if it...
Yeah, I like playing Mario 3.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I've got misters. I built multiple misters because I enjoy messing with them. You know, they play classic consoles, up there, everything through the 16-bit era, and 486 DOS machines for that matter. But, a lot of this stuff, you have to use cracked games, you have to use, I'm doing FPGA emulation for God's sake, because the hardware is so damned expensive to get Amiga stuff anymore. What that really means is I should raid all my classic computers, get them cleaned up, make sure they work, and put them up on eBay and cash out. But it's what I should do. I don't know that is what I'm going to do, but I should. I don't know. I don't like the idea that, Sony says that console is not important anymore, so we're shutting down support for it. So fuck you.
Yeah, if they don't want to support it, I'm fine with them not supporting it. They have to put out a patch, making it where it no longer needs their support.
Cycros is mentioning Solar Realms Elite. You have to set your CMOS clock to before the year 2000. I believe it. There's probably tons of old DOS games like that. Although there's tons of old DOS games you have to run in DOSBox because they run so damn fast on modern hardware they're unplayable. But yeah, I mean, the PS3 and 4 era stuff will never, you know, if it's all tied to online services where if you don't hack up the console, it won't play, or if you don't stand up some intercept server to, you know, pretend to be the PlayStation Network. I mean, this is, you know, game preservation's a thing. And yeah, back in the days of the Nintendo, Super Nintendo, and Genesis, sure, you just dump the carts, right? But when it's all tied to online services and everything has to do check-ins and you know, they're shutting it down and stuff doesn't work when it can't talk to those servers. I mean, how many MMOs that people bought can you not play anymore because the servers are gone? And yet, I'm sure those IP holders will still sue the fuck out of anybody running private servers.
So. Not sure, because I've only really looked at the more popular ones, and they're still running. But I know there's a bunch of them that never got off the ground.
A lot of them are, but like, you know, the Star Wars one was shut down. Knights of the Old Republic. Oh, maybe it was the old Knights of the Old Republic. The Star Wars, one of the Star Wars MMOs was shut down, one of the early ones. The City of Heroes, the original City of Heroes was shut down. Tons of small ones were shut down.
I actually tried to log into that one not too long ago.
So, anyways, feel my voice going. Last story for tonight, Discord. This is from The Verge. Discord will block not safe for work servers on iOS. I'm not that concerned about Discord, but I am concerned about setting a precedent that you can require apps to block things that are considered not safe for work content. Because that kind of filtering could get out of hand quickly, especially because if you prove you can do it, you're going to have the RIAA knocking on your door saying, now we want you to block all piracy, you know, related content in your apps as well.
Yeah, it just escalates. It's not worth even thinking about.
So Discord is ramping up its restrictions on adult content with new age gates on not safe for work servers and a ban on accessing those servers from iOS devices. Entire servers can now be marked as not safe for work if their community, quote, is organized around not safe for work themes or the majority of the server's content is 18+, unquote. So, how long before that's just anything we don't like?
It's already everything we don't like, Morps. And more, as we decide we don't like it.
This label will be a requirement going forward, and Discord will proactively mark servers as not safe for work if they fail to self-identify. Discord previously allowed individual channels to be marked as not safe for work and educated. The not safe for work marker does two things. First, it prevents anyone from under the age of 18 from joining. Fucking how? Everyone who's used the internet from when they were less than 18 learned how to just lie and say that they were older than that.
They would have to require some type of ID and then hope that you didn't take your parents.
But the bigger limitation is that it prevents not safe for work servers from being accessed on iOS devices, a significant restriction that's almost certainly meant to cater to Apple's strict and often more prudish rules around nudity and services distributed through the App Store. Apple puts a web browser on their damned things. I mean, come on. Anyways. Tumblr infamously wiped porn from its entire platform in order to come into compliance with Apple's rules. At least some Discord users seem to be frustrated by the changes, judging from their action on Twitter. Nobody cares about people on Twitter. Nobody cares what anybody on Twitter has to say. Several people tweeted this could make them switch to Android. One said that the restriction posed a problem for them since they needed to be able to monitor their server while mobile. The ban seems to be particularly concerning to art communities that include sexual illustrations. So, yeah, I'm not a fan of Discord. You know, we use TeamSpeak for a reason.
Yep.
And there are some communities I'd like to get involved with, but they're on Discord, so... I'm actually, you know, because I'm going to be moving soon, I've been kind of planning what my new setup's going to be. I'm going to have a box just dedicated to comms. I'm going to have an entire system. It'll probably be an Intel NUC. That's just, that box does communications. That runs my TeamSpeak if I want to join Discord or, you know, something like that. So that none of my banking, none of my web browsing, none of any of that stuff ever happens on this isolated machine that all it's for is joining chat rooms, basically. And I'm probably...
That is enough of the chat rooms are recording you that that's not a bad idea.
Yeah.
I'm dead serious. That's what I'm going to do. Partially, it's so I can just, you know, have those on their own dedicated screen. But partially, it's... Okay, I know my TeamSpeak server's not tracking me because we built it. But everything else I want to connect to that's you know, chat-based, I'll just do it on the one dedicated machine. And it's going to run a Linux, but I'm thinking it might be cubes so that I can actually do separate VMs for each chat channel. One VM runs TeamSpeak, one VM runs Discord, one VM runs whatever the next one I need to connect to is. You know, if I ever need to log into Facebook, it'll probably be on that box in its own VM. I don't know that I'll do cubes, but I'm thinking it might get to that level of segmentation just to control. The only downside is it makes it hard to copy, you know, copy paste links in and out of TeamSpeak, but there are ways around that. Mainly the clipboard sync tools for multiple machines. So it also means I have to use a separate keyboard and mouse, but whatever. So I'm dead serious. I'm going to set up a box like that. Because my plan is once I get moved, I've got, you know, I'm going to purchase a couple of monitors that'll work better for the setup I want to do. I'm fully planning on buying a piece of MDF, painting it to match the color of the wall, and, you know, putting a couple of, like, 4-inch lug bolts into studs on the MDF board against the wall. That way I can just, you know, get a bunch of monitor arms and mount wherever I want on the board. One means I'm not putting a ton of holes in the wall. But two, I don't have to look for studs to do monitor mountings, and I'm just going to do basically a wall of displays. You know, some for various uses, and one is going to be a segmented box just for comms stuff.
Like the Batman from the 80s when they walked into the Batcave and saw all the monitors.
Oh, when, if we're going to go for that, then I need to break out the 3D printers and label all of them as well.
Oh, I was going with Michael Keaton Batman, not whatever the other guy Batman.
Adam West. And actually, though, if you want to do that correctly, you need a bunch of Bakelite. You can do the Bakelite name badges for everything.
And I was wrong earlier. I was thinking DC Online, not City of Heroes. But that should have been made open source whenever that got canned.
I like the idea that if you're running an MMO or something like that and you're going to shut down, you need to open source it.
I don't even think it should be limited to MMOs. I think if you have the copyright for a book and you're going to leave it out of publication for more than 2 years, it should become public domain.
I'd be down for that. I think that'd be a good way to go. You're not actively making money off of it anymore. What's it matter?
Yeah, if you're not going to publish it, it's public domain. And I'll give them a couple years leeway on that. So yeah, if you're not going to publish it for 2 years, or if it hasn't been published in 2 years, it's public domain.
So let's move on to Dojo and wrap up here because we are running long, even though I didn't want to. Two things for you tonight in Digital Dojo. The first is something I considered keeping to myself in rating for Digital Dojos, but instead I decided I would just dump the thing itself, and that is an interesting directory of tools. So it's called tinytools.directory, and it's an aggregated list of open source, experimental, and small, tiny tools, and he's got them all tagged. So you can go through here and click things like free, game engine, fantasy console, Python, which comes up with nothing. So let's uncheck Python. So free game engine fantasy console comes up with Pixel Vision 8, Lyco 12, and Homegirl Pro. If we uncheck Fantasy Console and put Python in, that comes up with Unicorn Console, RenPy, open source cross-platform visual novel development engine. Okay. 3D World, virtual world simulation platform, Life Simulator. Yeah, so, you know, there's all kinds of stuff where you can just kind of click through your tags. Like, okay, I just unchecked that. Okay, free and printer. One of the things is live printer. Live coding for 3D. Oh, my God. They're writing your G-code in real time. Anyways, you know, if you're looking for specific software for projects and stuff, and it looks like there's a lot of stuff in here about game development. Yeah, this is a great tool for finding things. So just figured I'd throw the whole directory out there and find that to be useful. Very cool little website, especially if you're looking for something to play with. And then the other thing is a bit of a nostalgia trip, but I think is awesome. And that is a project on GitHub called WebAmp. So throw that link in here. WebAmp is a re-implementation of Winamp 2.9 in HTML5 and JavaScript with full skin support. And, you know, he's got his website running. You can actually embed WebAmp in a web page, so you could totally do that. And then I'm sure there's a way to, you know, implement, because he's got API documentation, examples, directories, so you probably could point it. It doesn't appear to support network streams or anything but MP3 files, unfortunately. It's not quite as robust as the original Winamp. If it supported Shoutcast streams, I would seriously consider replacing the player for the stream with...
Fuck yes.
If it supported Shoutcast.
Oh, Shoutcast TV coming back? That would be amazing.
But it,
like, fuck you, YouTube. I've got Shoutcast again.
Madman, you're showing your age again.
So, it's not quite that awesome, but it's still pretty damn cool. And it's open source, so you can self-host it if you want to run one at home. But they have the Milk Drop. They have the Milk Drop visualizer running, so that totally works, and you sit there and get the visuals for stuff, and it'll play... it looks like it'll play files from either Dropbox or, you know, just your hard disk if you want to give it, you know, your local files. But it's totally a JavaScript implementation of Winamp, and it's just cool. So I greatly enjoyed that. Anyways, that's all I have for tonight. Of course, listen to the stream. We're always working on it. Peer Decking every Thursday. The Galaxy 15 radio site and subreddit in the IRC tonight. Myself, Sardonyx, Cykros, DPVU, Madman, Striker, and the Coffee Maker. Madman, closing thoughts.
The only problem I had with Shoutcast TV is all the good channels had a time limit before they kicked you. Just because they couldn't get everyone in and they wanted to rotate out. Fucking communists. I logged in at 4 in the morning because that's the only time I could get in. And started watching shit. I should be able to watch all your fucking shit.
Are you closing thoughts?
Yeah, it looks like Dogecoin did all right. The closing of the show today, it's 27 cents. Okay. I mean, this is just crippling highs and lows here, man. This is killing me watching this shit. There's no way I could actually have money invested in this. It's just too agonizing to watch. But yeah, that's it for me.
All right, well, I've got nothing else, so time to play out the noises and close us out.
That's it, man. Game over, man. It's game over.
Now I'm just going to nose down and call it a night.
Shut up, Wesley. I'm going to be honest with you. I'm kind of retarded.